Welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's July 21st. I'm Andy Klein. I'm your host for today. And coming up, it's a day of whales, DJs, and dance, plus peer-to-peer discussions of mental health. The whales will be what you see on a cruise coming up that benefits the Juno Partnership for a Capital Civic Center. The DJ is PhD Javi, who's going to be playing at Crystal Saloon tonight. Peer-to-peer connections are from NAMI of Juno, and they're focused on mental health and recovery. And the dance, that comes from AK Inverted, which is putting on a workshop on tap dancing, musical theater, and a twerk shop. Yes, a twerk shop on twerking. That's all ahead. I hope you'll stay with us. For the weekend weather, well, rain's in the forecast this weekend with clearing skies midweek and into next weekend.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akhwan. The Clean AD have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin Katka K Jin Tak Anakaya Haanikak Gunshish.
Well, welcome back to Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And there's going to be, yes, a whale of a good time coming up on a whale-watching cruise that's going to be happening at the beginning of August. And here to talk to us about it is Nancy DeCherney and Ginny Palmer. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Good to see you. And yes. Nancy, let's talk first to you. You're doing this because it is a fundraiser for the Capital Civic Center project.
Yes. Yeah. So we're still trying to build a building, and we're going to get it done.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about the building. Sort of where are we with that right now? I think that's one of those things that comes in and out of the news a little bit as these long-term projects do.
Yeah. And we're sort of on a taken as, Bob Banghart is our executive director on that. And as he says, we're taking a new path now, but it's the old path. And I think it's a good path. And we're working really hard on it. And I do have a lot of optimism about where we're going to be with it. Pretty soon we'll be able to say some things more publicly about that.
Okay, well, great. And in the meantime, a great way to kind of continue the support of it in general and help out as these projects go along is this whale-watching cruise going to be on Al Marine Line whale-watching catamaran.
They're always so supportive.
Yes, and it's going to be out of Stater Harbor. And Ginny, you're a naturalist?
I am, but I am, of course, a retired naturalist.
Yes.
I was starting to tell you, I already used my joke, so I have to say it again.
This is why we should never talk.
Before.
To the host, before the actual segment. No, right. That's fine. Let's talk about
Well, because I studied humpback whales here 50 years ago. And I always tell people that I was only two, but nobody believes that. But anyway, it was an amazing time because there were no cruise ships. There were very few boats on the water. And it was like a laboratory. And in fact, the whale population was quite small. So this is an opportunity for people here in Juno, because Flip Nicklin is going to be there too. He's a fantastic photographer and does a lot of work in Hawaii and can let you know what it's like to be underwater with a whale.
And I like that. That's really interesting to me, that Hawaii and Southeast Alaska connection between some of this same population of humpback whales.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in fact, we were taking my husband, my name in those days was Giraz. And Chuck Giraz and I were taking pictures of the whales because we discovered we could tell them apart using their tail flukes. And we named him, of course. Roger Payne, who was from the East Coast.
Was that the name of a whale?
No. Okay. It was the name of a professor from out east. Came, and he was doing recordings in Hawaii. And, of course, they're sitting in a boat recording, and they're bored. And so they were taking pictures of whales and inadvertently got, of course, the whale tails because they would raise the tail. And so he suggested we invite Jim Darling from the University of Canada to come up because he was taking pictures. And we, at the Breakwater Inn, ours were all in slides. Jim's were all in snaps. And so we took the pictures off the walls in one of the rooms. I don't know that they knew that well. They're probably changed now.
It's changed ownership a few times, I think. Yeah, you're safe.
And so, and then we, I borrowed a couple projectors from the high school. And we put them up on the wall, and we matched the third one. And then we matched nine. And that established the connection between Juneau and Hawaii.
Now, tell me a little bit about, this is fascinating that you're saying, were you on the forefront of this idea of being able to essentially fingerprint whales by using the tail?
Yes, we were.
That's incredible.
We were.
That's an amazing, incredible achievement that's actually been sort of the cornerstone of whale biology and tracking whales now for that many 50 years. Yeah, incredible.
Because here's the thing. You know, they didn't know how long the big whales lived. And now we're getting a grasp, at least on the humpbacks. That's the main one I can talk about. Because we recently had one that died, unfortunately. Her name was Spot. It was a lady whale. And she'd had about maybe 6 or 7 babies over that time. And we took her picture 46 years ago.
I was going to say, is it possible that some of these whales that you were studying, when you were studying them even up to 50 years ago, might still be swimming in our waters?
Oh, and still come back.
Yeah.
Right. And some of them have passed, of course. But the exciting thing about it is we're beginning to understand about the great whales. You know, it's different than, because with killer whales, they used to take them and put them in a pond or a pool and be able to study them there. However, that didn't work so good because if you ever had seen those in SeaWorld, the fin drooped.
Yeah.
It never does that in the wild.
Isn't that interesting?
And then they would let them go and the fin would come back up. So were they depressed? Could be.
Well, they're such complex creatures. You know, there's so much going on with them. Well, it's so did you find out or what was sort of some of the focus of your study? Was it to determine life expectancy of whales or what were some of the focuses
We were both behavioralists and naturalists. And we just kind of fell into this. I'm from Wisconsin. Can you hear that Wisconsin twang? And so my dad was
there'll be cheese on board.
There will be cheese. Zeroldas is providing the snacks.
And so we came up here and Chuck had always wanted to come to Alaska. And we came up here and we first rented a house on the water and then we bought a boat. And that was the Ginger. It was an old Navy boat, 50 feet long and 13 feet through the beam. We had to replace the engine because the guy before us had cracked the block. And so we put in a 135 diesel. That's for all the men in the world.
Yeah.
But I think we lived on the old Navy silencers. So when they tried to record right next to the Ginger, they could only hear the tappets ticking, which was really made it a different world. And there were so few whales. There were approximately 15 whales in Lynn Canal. There were about 20 in Glacier Bay. There were about 35 or 40 down in Frederick Sound. Now, it's really interesting because this has been looked at a lot. Mm-hmm. And we were just going along with finding out about these wonderful animals. We had lots of kids from College of the Atlantic and Harvard and Yale that came to work with us and then didn't want to go home because we would sit and we would discuss everything and talk on the back deck, you know, and discuss what we were learning. And that was wonderful. And it was really interesting because now Lou Herman, who was a professor at the University of Hawaii, an amazing person, he reviewed the whales in Hawaii and determined, this paper was published probably, maybe 30 years ago, I'm guessing. And he discovered that 200 years ago, the whales were not in Hawaii. Because there was no evidence in their Hawaiian culture of them being there. Oh. He interviewed a lot of the Hawaiian elders, and there was no evidence. But they were in the Marianas Islands, where they were heavily pursued and whaled.
So they kind of
moved over
because of the whaling activities.
Yeah,
is that the theory about why there's more, or why do you think there's more here today than there was 50 years ago when you were studying?
I think because they're not whaling, at least not humpbacks.
Yeah,
and the paper that I never wrote, I'll probably put this out there now, and then I'll have all these people write it. I surmise that suspected was true, because there was no evidence, that here in our culture, here in the indigenous people's culture, they have killer whales, sea lions, seals, ravens, eagles, but
no humpbacks.
And so I imagine that they came in later too. I've tried to talk to a couple elders, but have been unsuccessful. And so I would like to see them establish that within the indigenous culture. Were there humpbacks here? And because I feel that we were right on the cusp of them coming in 50 years ago. Because they migrate, I think, according to the agnatic lines, or the magnetic lines, you know, and that leads you right into Southeast Alaska.
That's sort of how they do their navigation. A theory of how they do their navigation anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, fascinating. Well, so fascinating to talk to you. And tell me a little bit more about Flip Nicklin and his work.
Okay. So he's fantastic. I don't know him really well, but he's a great guy from what I know. He is a well-known photographer, and he has done a lot of his work in Hawaii because, of course, the weather's better. And you can...
He's a smart guy.
Yeah. And he dives, and he does underwater work with the whales.
Right.
That's spectacular. I mean, I'm a diver years ago, but in Alaska, you don't see that much underwater.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And so that's a fascinating thing. As you were saying, he can sort of give this idea of a view of what whales look like in their own environment.
Yes. And that's the exciting thing. So when people come to this cruise, it's going to be totally different than what they're used to, because we want them to walk away with a sizzle and a real step in their get along, you know, because they'll better understand these whales. There's lots of things that I've learned about whales that I have not really talked about, but I will talk about them, and we'll share those ideas on board. And I think it's important not only for the people residents here, but for visitors, because the exciting thing about whale boats that take people out is that when they're following the rules and not running up on them, the people get excited about seeing these beautiful animals. And that's really important.
I was out on a whale watching cruise just a couple of weeks ago on an Allen Marine boat, and was able to see bubble feeding.
Oh. Yeah.
And, you know, they just kind of did it in this area kind of south of Shelter Island there for 2 hours.
You know,
we left and they were still going strong, bubble feeding. So it is an amazing thing that
we named that, you know, and discovered
that bubble feeding.
It's bubble net feeding.
And you were the ones that named it.
They named it, and we published it in 1979.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And so, because when we first saw it, we were like, wow.
What's going on?
Yeah. Right. And the water was really calm. The first time we saw it.
Had there been any accounts of that happening before you observed it and sort of?
There was a man mentioned it in a paper in the Atlantic Ocean. But just that he saw these bubbles and then the whale came up, but he didn't name it. And that was the only indication when I did a literature search that I could find. And this paper was then reviewed by Sylvia Earle. I don't know if you know Sylvia Earle.
Incredibly famous oceanographer.
And Sylvia Earle and Roger Payne did it too. And we had, because you always have to get five people to review a paper before they'll publish it. And so, but yeah, that was one of the things that we named.
Well, it's such an honor to meet you and all of the amazing work that you've done and been on the forefront of doing.
It was fun.
With all this whale biology that we're, of course, have a front row seat to. And folks will on August 3rd have a front row seat.
Yes. And and it'll give them, I mean, Ginny is like sort of the history. I mean, she
really cool.
is the start, sort of. And then Flip can talk about what's current. What's going on in Hawaii and what other places. So it'll be a real exciting time if you're interested in whales. And plus, it's just going to be beautiful weather, as you pointed out.
Guaranteed.
And it's going to be an opportunity. I mean, you'll get to meet people and talk and people and have a wonderful evening.
This is Thursday, August 3rd. It's from 5:30 to 8:30. The tickets are $120 per person. It's, of course, out at Stater Harbor there in the Almarine Catamaran, which is almost a guarantee to see amazing whale activity out there. It's incredible. And it's also a benefit for the Capital Civic Center. And more information on that is at capitalciviccenter.org. And as you said, Nancy, there's some developments happening.
Yes,
there.
And there will probably be some of that shared on the ship, right. We hope.
The inside scoop. Very good. Very good.
No, it's going to be a wonderful evening. We've done it several times, and the whales seem to be in support of the whole effort.
Yes.
Absolutely.
They know. They know the good work that you've been putting in. They understand.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much to both of you for coming in. It sounds like a great time, and it'll be such an opportunity for people to talk to Ginny and Flip, kind of get some of the original work that's been done. And just as you just heard, bubble net feeding. Here we are. The person
history's
that
made
coined
here.
The term. It's very exciting.
Yes.
And that's all happening. Again, a whale of a good time, whale watching cruise. And you can find out more info by going to capitalciviccenter.org. And, where are tickets available for
this?
You
can get them at the Jack. You can get them online. I would recommend going. You can get them. I think there's a link on our website, too. So there's a Facebook thing, you know.
Great. All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks.
Thank you, Andy.
Great to meet you, Ginny and Nancy. Great to see you again. And thanks for letting us know all about the whale of a good time whale watching cruise.
Hope we see you.
All right.
We like the music. We love the disco sound.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K here at KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and DJ PhD Javi's with me right now. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And you're playing tonight at the Crystal Saloon?
Yeah, I got tonight at the Crystal Saloon and the stage, and then we're going to set up some lights. Big shout out to David for booking me and everybody at the Crystal. And then tomorrow I will be playing at the Imperial. So I'm kind of regular there at the Imperial.
Oh, good. Yeah. So you got a couple of gigs happening this weekend. Yeah, good. Busy weekend for you.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. How did you get into – how long have you been DJing?
I've been DJing since – I've been wanting to get into it when I was a little kid, but I just – the equipment is just too expensive and stuff like that, especially when you're a kid. You know, your mom and dad are not going to buy you something that's you know, $400 or $500. But I went to Cancun and I saw some festivals, and I saw this guy, Sander Van Dorn and Nicky Romero. And me and my cousin went to this club called The City in Cancun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big nightclub. And the Chainsmokers were DJing that night.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys ever heard that song, Don't Let Me Down, 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 Dun, 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 Dun.
I don't know. We might even have it in the library here. I'll find it. But yeah, keep going. So the Chainsmokers, that's cool. I mean, that's a big, they're big.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And it was back in 2016, and I noticed my cousin, Artie, he also DJs at the Imperial also. He was starting to DJ like in his room and stuff like that. And I was like, hey, how could I get into it? Like I asked DJ Manu when he was still here and some of the other people. And my cousin had a mixer that I sold him a car. He said, hey, do you want to do a deal? And I was like, what is it? He's like, instead of me paying you the rest of the money, do you want me just to give you this?
I love it. A car for a mixer. Love it. This is it. This is the kind of origin stories you want out of a good DJ.
Yeah, I was
traded a car in.
Yeah.
I love it.
I was like, you know what? Sure, let's do it. And
that's
I started
cool.
practicing, and I've been practicing in my room for a long time, and I was always really shy, but they had this thing called Burning Rain last year.
Yeah, DJ Manu was big in putting that together as well. Yep, right.
So I was like, you know what? I try to go around and say, hey, if can I DJ? And I was like, screw it. I'm very stage fright, but I want to go in there and get it done. And one time I did a Burning Rain, and one of the bartenders at the Alaskan, her name is Kelsey, she knew that I was kind of DJing, and she's like, hey, we had a DJ fallout, and we're having this pirate theme party at the Alaskan. Do you want to DJ? And I was like, yeah. And I was thinking to myself, man, it's a Saturday night, and I'm DJing at the Alaskan.
It's going to be bumping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. And are you a Juneau kid?
Yeah, I was raised here.
Yeah.
I'm originally from Mexico City, but I've lived here most of my life.
Yeah. So playing at the Alaskans, kind of like, that's a big deal. Yeah. And now the Crystal Saloon, such a great venue, and the Imperials, they got that great back room as well, great venue as well.
Yeah.
And tell me, when you were saying the equipment, what sort of equipment do you need? Do you need a mixer? Do you have to have your own amps and speakers and stuff like that too? Or what does it take to kind of get together a DJ set, setup?
Well, right now, you don't need, when you DJ at the bar, they already provide all that for you.
They usually have a sound system kind of setup? Okay.
But you do need headphones, which, you want to get someone's ones that are durable.
And I got to say, what I love right now in the studio, you're here, you're wearing headphones, but you're doing the classic club DJ thing. You got one off one ear. I love it. You got one off one ear.
I'm used to it.
I know. You got to take requests.
Yeah.
You got to hear how it sounds. That's right.
That's how I always wear them.
I interrupted you. But anyway, the mixers. Because there are digital mixers now, right? I mean, it's no longer two turntables and a microphone kind of thing, right? You're digitally mixing.
Yeah. But so my cousin already has one that you can actually play records on in those turntables.
Oh, cool.
Back in the day when they started to go between actual CDs and records, they came up with the CDJs that you actually put CDs in it versus the ones that you put the record on.
Right.
So I have one that's portable that it's you put your USB in it, and it has four channels, and it has two platters that you can go you can make it four channel. And I had a really crappy one that I started with, the one that I had since 2016, right, when I sold them the car,
right?
And it was already kind of
a few technology releases away from new.
Yeah.
That's all right. That's what you got to start with. It's like you got to buy an old guitar if you're a guitar. That's the same thing. Yeah.
I still have it just because I was like, you know what? It's my first one I started with. And I remember when I did Burning Rain, and everybody had their nice equipment and stuff like that. And
it's kind of sometimes nice to have a one piece of old stuff if you got to go to an outdoor thing.
Because nowadays, I don't think I'd bring my nice one over there.
Right. Well, you said you're from Mexico City originally. Does that culture and does that type of music, does that end up being kind of a foundation of a lot of what you do? You bring that to when you do sets?
A little bit of it, because I'm not I don't listen to like Mexican regional music, like corridos and stuff like that. I like salsa, cumbia. I like some bachata. I know a lot of people like it, so I play it. Some merengue, but I started off as an EDM DJ, electronic dance music DJ. Yep. And I got called to do the Imperial. And the Imperial is more of a hip hop kind of crowd. And I was like, man, I'm going out of my comfort zone here. Everybody knows me as the Alaskan DJ, a DJ from the Alaskan.
Right.
And I was playing more EDM and stuff over there. And my cousin's mixer broke, and Auntie Shelley and Danielle and Taylor asked me if I can, cover. I said, okay. And I was really excited. But just like the Alaskan, when they asked me to do the pirate theme party, I said, okay. And then said, what did I get myself into? And I was like, crap.
I have a story. Many years ago, I was asked to do the back room of the Viking. I don't even remember when the Viking had a back room. And boy, you talk about being out of your element. I was out of my element.
Yeah.
I made it through. I made peace with everyone. We figured it out. We got the dance floor going. We got everything going. But boy, you go in. I kind of went in with an idea about what I wanted to play, but that wasn't what the crowd wanted. You know, and you gotta adjust, especially if you're you know, this is a small town, right? So there's just a few venues, and you got to make sure that you're giving the people what they want at those venues, right?
I noticed every bar, the Alaskan, the Imperial, and the Crystal both have their own crowds, and you just got to adjust. But when I was playing at Burning Rain, I found myself, everybody else was playing EDM, and they had a couple bands and stuff like that. And I found myself starting to play, you know, EDM, but also like reggaeton. I was starting playing hip hop and, you know, stuff like urban music, like that you would, you know.
Just while you were out there, just that's the stuff that came to you while you were thinking about how to do a mix from one mix to another. And
it all sounded really good. I was like, you know what? I'm the only one playing hip hop here, and I love hip hop. So I just didn't know I had it in me. And that's what kind of gave me a little more confidence to say yes to my friends from the Imperial. And now I'm like, you know what? You know, I'm a little nervous, but I know I got this. And I've been playing at the Imperial for a while now, and it's been really cool.
So when you play, it's kind of interesting. When you play the Crystal on Friday night tonight, mm-hmm. and then you play the Imperial, you'll really do very, very different sets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And depending on the people that's there, because I can read the crowd and be like, okay, well, let's try this and this. Because I know some people, I feel like the Crystal is likes more EDM kind of stuff, dance music. The Imperial, I started playing a little bit of that my last set. And I did, actually, Steven told me that. It's like, hey, dude, that was a perfect combination of, you know, hip hop and EDM. And I was like, oh, yeah, it was. That was actually a pretty cool set that I did last weekend.
That's cool.
Because it, you know, I did a bunch of remixes of like older hip hop songs mixed with EDM and like tech house and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And people were really digging it. So I was like, oh, man. And
well, that's great. What great feedback to get. You know, you kind of go out a little bit. And it's so great to get positive feedback when you do that, you know, when you kind of like you said, you're out of your comfort zone just a little bit, but people really reacted to it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What do you think it's interesting because the way you've been talking about, you've sort of been talking about how you've taken these steps. What do you think are maybe the next steps or what are things that you aspire to get to?
So I just want to say, I want to thank, you know, everybody that helped me because it was really hard to get a gig. And Morgan from the Alaskan gave me an opportunity. It's like, hey, you know, you want to play after the band, or you want to play tonight? And she, you know, would make this flyers like the dance party, PhD Javi, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, even though it's a smaller station, there's a lot of people that started getting to know me because of the Alaskan. And then, you know, I started doing bigger parties and stuff like that. I feel like a few of my bigger parties were like New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
When I did at the Imperial, I did from 10 to 12 and then 12:15 till 2:30 or 2:45 at the Alaskan with my friend Kelly.
Oh, all right. So you skipped. That's great. You kind of went from one venue that you had to run across the street.
Yep.
Get all set up.
I was already set up at next door at the Alaskan.
That's cool.
And then that one and then 3rd of July and Dana Herndon's going away party. After that, people started talking about me and stuff like that. And I was like, they're like, man, where'd you come from? And I feel like, you know, I want to keep getting better. Mm-hmm. I want to, there's some great people around me that support me and that always, you know, are around me. I want to continue to get better because I know it's not going to happen overnight or maybe not in 2 years or 3 years, but eventually I want to DJ at like Tomorrowland or EDC Las Vegas.
Yeah, right.
Or
get to these big venues.
The big stages and stuff
big
like that.
Big festivals, big venues, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah, well, it can happen. I mean, DJ Astronomar came through.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's guys like Mar who, you know, he just grinded it out, continues to do so, is doing incredible work. So it can definitely happen. And congratulations on everything that's happened so far. It's DJ PhD Javi is playing tonight at the Crystal, tomorrow night at the Imperial.
Tomorrow night at the Imperial.
And you can pretty much catch you every weekend somewhere, it sounds like.
Yeah, I've been trying to stay active for ever right, since I started.
Well, that's great. Well, so great to meet you, and congratulations on all the great work that you've been doing, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. Thank all you, right, guys, man. And have a nice day.
All right. Here's a little. I'm going to play a little Mos Def. You were talking about hip-hop. I just love Mos Def. I'm just going to play a little. Yeah, yeah.
Play all the things that you know. You can't stop my goal. You can't stop my goal. Born to be who I am. Been born to be who I am. Bright light from a distant star.
Miracles answer prayer. All right, a little Mos Def there. Welcome back to community-supported public media station, KTOO. It's Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And now we've got in coming up next, Darren Kelly, who's with NAMI Juno. And Darren is going to let us know a little bit about some of the connection recovery support groups that are happening, peer-to-peer connection groups. Darren, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Yeah. It's a real honor.
Yeah. And yeah, tell me a little bit about this. The idea here is maybe something that happens a lot in therapy and that kind of thing, getting together with a group of people and talking about common problems, common issues, things that maybe make you feel like, hey, you know, I'm not alone in my struggle here on different things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, so NAMI is National Alliance of Mental Illness, and the Juno chapter here, I'm actually on the board, but then also I help facilitate some of these groups, these peer-to-peer connection groups. In addition to the peer-to-peer groups, we also have the family support groups. But you're absolutely right. Those groups, what I find so powerful about them, everyone in, for example, facilitates has our own mental illness struggles. I've had mental illness my whole life. You know, 5+ decades, and only in the last decade have I gotten treatment and things like that. So, a big part of my recovery here in Juneau has been these support networks.
When you say recovery, talk to me about that term, recovery, in terms of mental illness.
Yeah. I think another way to say recovery would be the path that you're on. You know, finding ways to find both coping mechanisms, and more important than coping mechanisms, actually find healthy ways to respond to your specific diagnosis. So, you know, for me, I had bipolar 2 and now borderline personality disorder diagnosis. And so for example, I've learned there's certain techniques I can use, tools that I can use. Like one is dialectical behavior therapy. Different when I'm particularly, most of us who are basically neurologically diverse is another term. In other words, we don't necessarily think the way a lot of other folks think. We tend to react to things differently. And so that could be reacting.
And that's so interesting because, you know, speaking to peers, to other people is almost the only way you'd realize that in some ways, right? That's coming to a realization that like, oh yeah, we in this group are the two people that think that way, but no one else does.
That's exactly right. I spent decades knowing I was different. Knowing I didn't react the way other folks did. But then you go to these groups and realize, okay, well, everybody may have their own diagnosis, but suddenly you realize that they're on their own journey, have their own path, but you suddenly feel like you can actually be honest. You know, most of us who have mental illness just mask. In other words,
there's such a stigma associated with even saying the words, illness or mental health, or that I have a diagnosis in a mental, mental health arena. So I think it must be, you know, I guess not to use a catchphrase, but empowering. It must be empowering to sit in a group of people and sort of share that you have these common experiences.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think the right word is liberating, to just realize that you can just let down that mask, don't have to hide anymore, realize that other people struggle as much as you. And then I look at it for me in terms of the connections group. It's every Wednesday night over at the NAMI Juno building. Now it's at Teal Center. Basically, for me, many of us with mental illness, and everybody's got their own journey. My journey, some of the things I've struggled with my whole life is a sense of loneliness. The fact that I'm other, different, had to hide how I'm actually literally feeling and how I'm actually literally thinking.
Which exacerbates loneliness.
Loneliness and, you know, lack of connection is very unhealthy. Right. As humans, we're hardwired to be in a group. And when you feel other, it's very detrimental to your mental health. You know, just look at a baby who feels like they're not getting the care they need. You know, it's literally trauma. And so we all have our own version of that trauma. So the loneliness, of course, you're in a group where suddenly people are there. And also, it's great to see new people come in, and you just see this where they, you know, they're kind of tentative at first, and then they begin to realize, like, we're all being really open about our stuff. We don't actually know our personal stories, but the main point is we're just there to share and then also learn from each other. That's what's great.
And you were saying there's kind of two different groups here. One is this connections group, but then there's also a family-centered kind of kind of workshops, or I guess just not workshops,
it's pretty similar. So yeah. I'll just talk, you know, the peer-to-peer group is every Wednesday here in Juneau at the NAMI Juneau building. It's over on Teal Street, which is over kind of towards the airport there. We just moved over there with a number of other nonprofits. And that's every Wednesday night, 5:30 to 7. And then also, I have to always check, we also have an online for those of you guys who can't get there in person. That's actually for folks around the state. Many of the facilitators are the same, are folks here in Juneau. That is actually, let me just check.
NAMI is a part of course, a national alliance.
Right.
So there's sort of a cooperative Alaska kind of workshops and or just resources that happen.
Exactly. So for example, as online ones, it's the first and fourth Thursday of every month, and that's also 5:30 to 7. So you can go to either one of those, and I do want to just share that we talk about mental illness and loneliness, but the reality is, you know, estimates are that 25% of the American public has a diagnosable mental illness. So, you know, those are the listeners out there, you know, let's say the, 10,000 listeners out there right now, 2,500 of you guys have a diagnosable mental illness.
What do you think? People are just sort of have come up with their own self-coping mechanisms in different ways but sort of are struggling on their own in a lot of cases.
Exactly. Maybe. You know, and it could be alcohol, drugs. It could be
self-medication.
It can be folks do find ways to cope. You know, I have some friends who do admit they have diagnosable mental health conditions, but they don't go to therapy and things like that. So the great news is some people can do that, but many of us who have a mental illness, we've learned that we have to use all the tools. You know, whether it's it took me a long time to admit that meds might be helpful, therapy. I've also seen a psychiatrist in addition to a counselor. And then for me, this connections piece is really, really helpful.
Just a piece of what might be helpful and the person's sort of overall way of kind of dealing with it. I guess I was thinking too, when I was saying like about people who sort of have figured out their own strategy on their own, they might still benefit greatly by also talking to other people, even if they feel like they've kind of like quote unquote got it under control or have figured out a strategy for themselves.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, we do ask that folks actually have a diagnosable mental health condition, just because we're not there to be a therapy group. We're not qualified. We're not therapists. We're actually there just to share our specific experiences and also what we're going through and how we might be able to help other folks. We do that as a group. Mm-hmm. It happened just the other night on Wednesday night. It's a great thing. And then I should say the other piece to the connections is also the family support piece. And, you know, I can admit that, you know, anyone with a pretty serious mental illness, it takes a pretty big toll on your loved ones. And so that is also a very active group, and that is also in person. And then it's also online as well. And I should say with all this stuff that, you know, I can list the times, but if you just go to the NAMI Juneau website, you can pretty easily find all that stuff.
NAMI Juneau website is what to search for. And it's the Juneau Connection Recovery Support Groups. They're in person. It's on Wednesdays. And then that's this peer-to-peer connections group. And then there's also a family component as well. And as you said, finding out the schedules and stuff is just as easy as searching NAMI Juneau. And you'll find the full, all the different courses and all the different things that they're doing out there. Well, Darren Kelly from NAMI, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. Thanks for all the great information.
Hey, it's a real honor. Thanks
and,
for
yeah, it sounds like a really cool thing going on out there.
Yeah, appreciate thank you.
It. And in the new offices, right?
Yeah, fancy new offices.
And it's at Teal Street. That's kind of out in that area, kind of near the airport.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thanks again for coming in and letting us know all about it.
Hey, thank you, man. All right. Take care.
Makes me hazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, a little yowzy, yowzy, yowzy. Well, from tap to twerk, dancing in all its forms is both great physical activity and a great means of expression. But it's good to know just a little bit about what you're doing before you get out there on the dance floor. And AK Inverted has a workshop and a twerk shop coming up as well. that's going to be talking all about that. And coming up right now in the studio with me, Kelsey Reicher's here. Kelsey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
All right. Andy. All right. And Lisa Coogan's here. And Lisa, you're the person that's the owner of AK Inverted.
Yes, correct.
Started it out, founded it. That's got right. The building together, all that stuff. Very cool. And also, Jennifer Gross is here. And Jennifer, you've got the, I love the name, the Twerk Shop coming up. I think that's amazing.
Yes, sir.
To call it a Twerk Shop. And then you also teach roller.
Mm-hmm. Roller. I call it roller aerobics.
What? Roller aerobics?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And that's done in the studio as well?
Mm-hmm.
Is that terrible on the floors?
No.
No, it's good?
No.
Yeah.
Good floors.
Oh, it's good floors. You got to have good floors. Okay.
I would think the tap is
I was
going to
say the tap.
Well, let's talk about tap first and foremost. Right. It's so cool. I mean, tap is, you know, I guess I almost thought about it as like a lost art or something out there. But is there a revival happening or is it just always been there and I just didn't realize it? Or
you
tell
know,
me about tap.
That's what a lot of people say about tap. I don't think tap ever went
right.
anywhere. And I certainly, wherever I go,
you're doing your part.
I'm tapping.
Absolutely.
I'm at work. I'm at home. I'm in the studio. I'm on stage. It never really went anywhere, but it is certainly a very specific form of dance that I'm so stoked to be getting out into the world, because whenever people see tap dance on stage or, you know, online in the last few years, I get people approaching me saying, I want to learn how to do that.
It's visceral.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something about it when you see it live.
Yeah.
I mean, I think number one, it's such an old form that we all have grown up seeing something at some point, someone doing tap.
Yeah.
Some amazing thing, some, you know, golden age of Hollywood thing, or maybe before Shirley Temple and
right.
you know, stuff like that.
And it feels like such a special skill because not every dancer is a tap dancer.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's impossible.
Right.
Kind of. Like
and
it's
so,
wild to when you hear the rhythms and see that happen.
And it feels impossible and looks impossible, right? But I get to teach these classes that are pretty much all level. And we get to break it down to something as simple as a toe heel or a heel toe, which is just walking.
Right.
And that is the basis of every tap step that is out there.
Now, do you think TikTok has helped tap? Or do you think that, you know, the shuffle stuff? I see that on TikTok all the time.
You know,
how about some good old fashioned tap? On
Andy
TikTok.
Klein?
Let's go to Tap Talk.
I'm not.
Let's do this.
I'm not going to lie to you. I am not on the TikTok.
You're not well,
or the Tap Talk.
This is the yeah.
Clearly, I need to be. And honestly, I would say TikTok has to be helping.
All right. Like, now, speaking of something else that looks impossible, let's talk about twerking.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know what's going on here. But tell me about twerking as like an actual dance form. You
yeah.
know, like, because I think that people think about it as just like, okay, it's like this, just this thing. But
mm-hmm.
it's really grown into something that's a component of dance.
Yeah, I think so, too. And just its origins is pretty rich in African culture and how it really got a good start in the U.S. down in New Orleans. And I'm from Mississippi, so a lot of that carried over. And so I've been twerking a lot since I was younger. And
I did not realize that. So there's sort of a line you can follow. New Orleans was sort of a hot spot of
mm-hmm.
it for many years.
Yeah. And then I think it like with DJs and artists like Uncle Luke and Sir Mix-a-Lot, you know, Baby Got Back. And
sure.
then
yes.
Juvenile with Back That ASS Up. I don't know if we can
yeah,
guess
yeah.
on here.
Sure.
And
you handled that well. Thank you. That was good.
but it's just really cool. And, you know, artists like Miley Cyrus, you know, mm-hmm. really brought it into the mainstream. And you get to see more people over on the West Coast that are trying it out. And so, and it's, I feel like it's so healthy. It's good, well-rounded dance. And since I've been teaching it, it just makes my hips feel good. you know, it strengthens those abductor muscles. And I think it just balances you out, winding your waist.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's funky and cool. And it's goes with lots of different forms of music and that kind of thing. Yeah, very
yeah.
cool.
And yeah, different music makes you move your body differently. And so there's all different kinds of ways that you can twerk. And so I try to cover a lot of it in class.
Can you give me an idea of like what's the kind of musical range that you teach with twerking?
So within Caribbean culture, there's a lot of dance hall music and it's faster. And then you have your Latin culture, Latin music. I tend to do more music that you would find down south. And so there's a lot of bucking and mixing is what it's called in New Orleans.
And what is mixing? What is that? That refer to music or to the dance?
The dance. Okay. So within twerk, there's in my class, I teach 5-core movements. So we have our winds, our shimmies, our salt shakers, our throwbacks. And our wiggles.
I love it. that's dancing.
Yeah, cool. Like Kelsey was.
I'm sure there's got to be obviously there's all these great tap terms, mm-hmm. but to know that twerking also, of course, is a discipline in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very free form and it's all that. Mm-hmm. And it's just fun. But then also, you know, it's got this real discipline to it.
Yeah,
in a way.
If you look at people that are really, really good at it, because I know like Instagram accounts like influencers in a while, you see people twerking in weird spots. And so people make a joke of it, but you see people that are so insanely good at it. And you just think about the muscle control that they have to do it. And like Kelsey was saying, like the toe tap, toe heel. Yeah, that's the way you walk in a foundational movement. So those five are foundational to build up and just
come. That's really cool. Really
do some
cool.
insane things with your body.
Yeah. And then musical theater stuff as well, you're teaching. So are you kind of doing every other week?
So it's a summer series. And I think we added a few weeks, so it'll go into September now. But kind of every other week, it's a tap class. And then next week, it'll be a musical theater dance class. Without the taps,
right?
where we get to
where you jazz hands. I mean, you got to
we definitely jazz hand in there, and get to listen to show tunes for an hour
a lot
and
of
a half.
Fossy.
So
it's
really,
it's a lot of
Fosse.
And then Alyssa, let's talk about the AK Inverted. Of course, refers to pole dancing and the amazing acrobatic stuff that happens there. And are there workshops happening there as well or classes that happen there as well? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, yes, AK Inverted started off with strictly being pole. And since then, I've expanded. Of course, there's so many other things that are being offered at the studio now. And that also includes aerial silks, which is very popular and trending as well. And then we've got many other things along with that, like flexibility and conditioning classes, other types of dance classes like flow arts. So that involves poi, which you see usually it's on fire and people are spinning balls of fire.
Oh,
and it looks
okay.
really wild and amazing.
Right.
So,
But your body movement and how you do that is what you're concentrating on.
Sure. Well, I mean, all of it.
Yeah.
So spinning poi without the fire. So there's that as well. And then we've got
all these terms.
Hoop.
You guys live in another world, man.
lots of stuff. And then also lira, which is a steel hoop that hangs from the ceiling.
Okay, I guess I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do a lot of amazing tricks and poses and flow in there as well.
Speaking of the Miley Cyrus, isn't that kind of on the cover of her new album? Isn't she kind of hanging?
Oh, yeah.
From one of those or something,
right.
I think.
I don't know
flowers
if it's that specific.
But anyway.
Maybe it's a trapeze. It could be.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Possibly.
But it's really, interesting.
So much inspiration
that,
from my...
You know, when you set up your studio, I mean, mm-hmm. I kind of just thinking about like structurally. When you set up a studio that has a functional pole in it that people are doing really rigorous stuff on, those things have to be strong, right?
So you,
and that's the same sort of stuff that goes into silks and into hanging trapeze and hanging those kinds of things. So am I right? Was I right?
Yeah, it's a trap.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely.
I'm not a professional.
No, you're fine.
The structural component is a very, very big piece, which is actually why it can be challenging to find places to rig these apparatuses at times.
So what did you have to do in the ceiling and roof work and stuff?
So my my family is in the
general. Construction.
And so it was kind of, you know, I had some family members come in and set some things up in the studio to make it safe and to make it work.
Yeah. We've and all so seen those fail videos of the poles.
That is not an option.
No. Right. No
all.
Good.
At all.
Don't do that.
And also, like, if anybody has like a pole that they want to set up in their home, totally reach out because yeah. I definitely know how to do that safely and I'm happy to do it for free.
That's a great, yeah. actually, that's a great mm-hmm. thing to offer because it's a, you know, you want people to be doing this safely and not, you know, you can get injured so easily yeah. if you do these things incorrectly.
Yeah.
I mean, any dance, any mm-hmm. physical activity, anything, that's one thing that's important about taking these workshops, right? Is that mm-hmm. people yeah. are learning the correct way to do this stuff so they don't get injured. Because right. no one's having fun then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Got so, a broken twerk. You don't want to.
No broken twerk.
No, there's, I mean, all the equipment that went into creating a safe space, you know, there was a lot of research I had to do and just making sure that I chose top-of-the-line equipment, which is from X-Pole. They're the leaders in the industry in aerial arts. And so, you know, I've got like 8-inch thick mats, crash mats now that are really great and amazing. So you can do all the crazy things and fly off the pole if you want and you're good.
That's so incredible. When you think about yeah. that, it mm-hmm. really is it's kind of amazing to think about doing that and making the environment safe mm-hmm. structurally, but also, yeah, mm-hmm. like crash mats.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I wouldn't have thought about that.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't know if I can say exactly the same for dancing in the heels because the heels are also 8 inches high. And that's kind of like, you know, you learn very slowly, step by step.
But, now, is that an integral part of the pole dancing, kind of like the culture of it? I mean, what there's a relationship between the culture of it in a way and those looks and then the athleticism of
correct.
It.
Correct. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's there's so many different styles and subcultures of any type of dance or movement or music even too. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think the sport pole, some people call it power pole. So that's, you know, when you're, you know, doing more of the challenging tricks where you really have to condition your body and be strong and use safe practices and whatnot. And then the heels, I mean, it's all relative. Like you also have to be insanely strong to do heels properly. Mm-hmm. And there's a learning curve for both. But then there's also other types, like some people do what's called like contemporary, right? Where it's contemporary dance with the pole. And it's very beautiful. And a lot of the moves look like ballet. And then sneaker pole is something that's kind of new, where you're doing sort of like B-girl, B-boy tricks with the pole in sneakers. And
that
so,
all sounds that's really fun. Yeah. I mean, the pole adding this element in the name of the studio, it's there, the inverted element, the mm-hmm. element of being able to be horizontal, vertical, upside down, all that. It's just fascinating. Yeah. But anyway, very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about if people want to get involved with these workshops, how do they find out about it and what are the dates and times and stuff like that? So, Kelsey, I'll start with you and your two workshops that you're doing.
Yeah. So definitely for all the information you need, check out akinverted.com. That's where you'll register for your classes. That's where you'll find your information. My classes are on Monday nights from 7:30 to 9. And again, it alternates between tap and musical theater dance.
Very cool. Nice. And what about twerking and roller?
And yeah. roller. So this Sunday, the 23rd, I believe I have a twerk shop from 5:30 to 7:30 if y'all want to come out.
And that's all ranges, right? That's you're assuming people are beginners, but maybe they mm-hmm. – okay. Yeah.
All ranges, and we'll go over – alternative methods, because I know a lot of people when they get started, the knees aren't ready for it. We got the quads that aren't ready for it. The hips. Yeah. So, you know, we have some beginner friendly alternatives sure. and just all levels that you're at. And like Kelsey said, check out the AK Inverted website.
Cool.
I just got back from a pretty long vacation, so I haven't put reoccurring classes on the schedule, but the twerk classes are usually every other Tuesday. So if you do Louis Trivia, they're the opposite of Louis
Trivia.
All
right.
Because I like
good.
To go to Louis Trivia.
I see. the hidden hand. Making the schedule happen.
That's
and Alyssa, anything else you want people to know about what's going on Inverted?
Really, the best way to get information is through our Instagram, AK Inverted. It's pretty easy to find. And then through the website, if you go to the classes page and then you scroll through, you can see all the different categories of classes we have, and then it lists the dates and times.
Well,
and
great.
You can register through there.
Well, thanks to all of you for coming in. It sounds super fun, and it's it sounds like the best of times out there. at AK Inverted. Thanks to all of you for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
And that's going to do it for Juno Afternoon today, broadcast live from KTOO on 104.3 FM, online at KTOO.org, and rebroadcast on this station at 7 p.m. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend.